This episode of the Hope Podcast is brought to us by the Spotlight Project. The Spotlight Project is a fantastic organization run by fantastic people with the mission of raising employment for individuals with intellectual or developmental disabilities. They create and sell beautiful jewelry, and each individual they employ has an intellectual or developmental disability and a unique story to tell. You can visit them at thespotlightprojectco.com. Again, thespotlightprojectco.com. Use the coupon code HOPE, H-O-P-E. Again, use the coupon code HOPE for 15% off your order.
We have an awesome story today with a good friend and person, Tristan Henry. Tristan's a professional soccer player for Forge FC in Canada's top division. And really blessed he came on the show to share some of his experiences growing up and facing these stereotypes that he had to overcome being a young black male in Canada and then coming to America for college. Also has really great insight and a recent story about the harm that false accusations of racism can have on someone and the people around them. So hope you guys enjoy. If you do, please leave a review and subscribe to the podcast. And with that, I'll turn it over to Tristan to tell his story.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Hope Podcast. Blessed to be joined with my good friend, Tristan Henry, Six God, as some call him. Really, one of my really good friends from Quinnipiac. He transferred in my junior year, his senior year. Was a goalkeeper with me, so we were training every day together and really got close through that competition and the friendship outside of the game. And he's moved back to Canada after college and is playing professionally in their top division for Forge FC. Fantastic player, but even better teammate and better friend. For sure, and really excited and grateful he was willing to top on the podcast today to tell a couple of stories about his life and some of the things he's experienced around race and kind of take it from there.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. So I grew up in Scarborough, so it's just another borough of Toronto connected to it. So I guess here, like, Scarborough's really... it's seen as kind of like the hood part of Toronto. Grew up around a lot of black people. Even going to school, like being in elementary school and like stuff like that, you probably have like two or three black kids in your class, stuff like that. So you're always exposed to racism in that way growing up. I remember even like in elementary school, just kids would pick on you, like simple stuff like telling jokes. Stuff like that. And that, those things that you really remember growing up and things you really never forget. But yeah, I experienced it young, so.
And those things, like you said, you never forget them. I think everyone can relate to that. Some of the things you kind of internalize when you're younger. But something I've been saying often, having these conversations with my black friends is when it has to do with the color of your skin, it's a different level because it's nothing you can control. And even if you could change it, you wouldn't want to. And so it has to be like kind of like an identity crisis at some point. One of my friends says, like, when you're younger, you don't understand things. And it's like you almost wish at a point when you're younger, I don't want to be black. And that should never happen.
Yeah, definitely. It's like it's become like a norm. You feel like it's something I should be able to deal with every day. And when you see it happening so much, like your friend, your other black friend, it's like this is a norm. It's something I'm used to. But yeah, I remember like going home sometime and it's like why are these jokes being told to me and not to other kids? And sometimes like the jokes they would say, you go online and try and search up like white jokes. There's no white joke, like I could tell that with, you know, like magnitude to the jokes I would get. So it was like always growing up, I always remembered that, and that was something that always stuck with me for sure.
Absolutely. And it's so important to think about because the things we do hear and learn as kids, we internalize and you know, people on the kind of on the other side who say like all lives matter, that kind of group, they want to point out there's tons of people who kind of, you know, black people who beat the odds and become very successful in society, and it's definitely possible, but it's you're already starting from a leg down because you're hearing these things constantly when you're so many being in a minority, so many black people are surrounded by white people, and in that situation where they already feel like they're not part of the group to begin with, just because of their color of their skin. And everyone knows the feelings, the anxiety of joining, like doing something new, being part of a new group. And then when you add in that extra factor, it's a huge step down. And that's where the word privilege comes from. It's a privilege that I never had to face, that extra step down.
Yeah.
So
it comes back to the thing of systematic racism, right? Like you said, as kids, you don't understand what race is. But it's your parents and the way you're brought up that teaches you there's a difference between my color and like or your color,
mm-hmm.
right? And those are just things that you have to deal with, like growing up. And then you said we have the barriers that are put up against just because of the color of our skin, right? Where we live, I guess like your parental situation, growing up in a one parent family, stuff like that. So, like you said, you're always up against it.
Absolutely. And I know I don't know a ton about your family situation. I know you're very close with your mom, and you know, if you wanted to touch on that, on your parental situation, any kind of, because I know there's a huge stereotype. I don't know what your relationship with your dad is, but I know there's a huge stereotype for black people, you know, and their fathers, and kind of growing up in a one parent household, and that's again another leg down.
Yeah. So I will, exactly, so like I said, I was close to my mom. I always lived alone with my mom, my sister. Never really had a father figure. So, and it's something that you see a lot with your black friends. I never really had many white friends. I had a lot more white friends growing up than I do now, but you would always see the difference. They have their full family, their dad, their mom there, and it's like, but there was always a difference when you met a black guy. It's like, I only had my mom with me or my dad, just one parent. And then that's, like, it goes back to it again. It's like, we're always put up against, and you don't have the value of having two parents there. Mother having to work, my mother had to work two jobs just to take care of me and my sister. So you understand the struggle there, and it's like, white kids, they don't really understand, like, what we go through. They go home, they have a full meal and everything, and a loving family home. And then I come home, I don't see my mom until later on in the night. We have to fend for ourselves, make food, stuff like that. And it's like, you really understand the struggle that goes on with being someone of a different color. So.
Absolutely. And the stereotypes that come along with it, again, there are so many that with black people, and you said it before, that when it comes to white people and the stereotypes around us, there aren't many. And jokes are jokes, and there's a time and a place for everything, and the relationships you have with certain people, you know the types of jokes you can make. But as a society, it's important that we ask ourselves the types of jokes that we're making. Are we adding to the problem? Are we adding to the problem? Because there are tons made about black people and in the media and just conversation, you know, in the locker room and whatnot, and important and uncomfortable conversations to have. But just if you want to expand on kind of growing up, like playing soccer, going through the recruiting process, and you started off at a junior college upstate at Herkimer, and kind of just go from there. Any situations with race or just your experience in general?
Yeah, like, so growing up in Toronto, there was, I won't lie, there's a lot of diversity in Toronto. So playing on the team, there's always a lot of black kids on the team. But those are really the guys that you relate to the most, guys you hang out with the most. So then I went to high school and everything like that. Like I said, I didn't have the grades to go straight to NCAA, so I went to junior college first. But it was good that I never really had personally any situations with coaches, stuff like that, saying or like putting me down just because of my race, anything that I could remember.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, in the locker room, it's always, you'd get those jokes from the white guys, like the typical white jokes about your parents, about basically just the color of your skin, how you're brought up in society, how you looked at in society. And it's an uncomfortable conversation to have. A lot of times we laugh it off, but at the end of the day, it's true. A lot of what they're saying is true. So in the moment, we might just laugh it off, but you go back and you think on it, it's like damn, like, most of the stuff they're saying is true. So that's stuff like that hurt. Always in the moment, we might laugh it off, but it hurts at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's why it's important, like, you know, I think in general in our society, like having conversations like this certainly looked at as a weakness, especially in the past. I think we're getting better as we go. And I think it's even larger of a stigma in the Black community. It's kind of seen as a weakness, and talking about these things, but it is really important. And looking back in the past, it's not about making excuses. It's just about acknowledging that what we did was wrong in the past and doing better in the future. So I want to be totally open about the things I said. So Tristan went from Herkimer to UConn to the year at UConn, and then transferred in to Quinnipiac. And certainly, we had one of the, very tight team. We were very close friends, and couldn't say, talk higher about the program and the people there. But for sure, there was jokes made. And I think, for me, I can only speak for myself personally. I didn't know that it was actually affecting you. I probably should have, but just, and the way you responded, I was always with laughter. You would laugh it off, and like you said, you'd laugh it off. You would make jokes back. You have a very fun personality, and that's great with a lot of jokes. But when they're actually like you said, true stereotypes, it cuts different. And it's important for people to know that, because I think most people want to make others feel good and aren't out to attack people. It's just people are trying to fit in, and that's a huge part of not speaking out back then. It's like you want to fit in, you want to be friends with everyone, and so it's easier to laugh it off and make a joke. Then say, fuck off. That's not cool.
Yeah. That's a part of it. Like being young, having those jokes told to you all the time. Man, that was always just my natural reaction, just to laugh it off. But like you said, it hurts at the end of the day. I think being an athlete, being a goalkeeper, I feel like it's an underlying thing that Black goalkeepers aren't as good as maybe say a white goalkeeper. If you look at the top divisions around the world, you don't see many Black goalkeepers. So I think that was always something that was I was up against. I think even dealing with it now on the professional level, they see how good you are, they see your athleticism, they see how you play, how you carry yourself, but there's always something that differentiates you from the white goalkeeper or a goalkeeper of another race. Mm-hmm. It feels like a Black goalkeeper can't be trusted as a white goalkeeper. So those are just underlying things that you feel, but it's not out there in the community for you to just speak on it and all the time and stuff like that. So that's always something that I always thought about. Maybe not everyone else sees it, but for sure I feel it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking about this yesterday with someone. There's kind of like three real types of racism. It's important we're having this conversation in society right now, but at least that I can say, and I'm learning new things every day, and I think that's important. But there's like the actual racists, the people down, mostly stereotypes down south who literally think that they're better than people based on the color of their skin. And that's a problem as a society we need to tackle, and I think most people agree on that. Then there's the kind of the people in the middle who either someone like me who was always on Black people's side, in all of this stuff, but which for sure makes some of those jokes out of love, but like you said, cut deep, and I didn't know that. So there's people like me who need to just do better every day, a little bit better every day, and not doing that. And then there's the institutional racism, and it's important that we acknowledge it. That takes time to kind of work through that. And my biggest belief is that, the stories we tell ourselves are the stories we tell other people, and those stories come true. And as a society, we need to ask ourselves questions, whether, acknowledge that we're doing that, and then ask questions of how we make it better.
Yeah, so I think that's something that's good that's going to come out of all of this, all these protests, and the civil rights movement that's going on right now, because it's allowing people to feel uncomfortable. Like you said, before you could tell those jokes and everyone just laughs it off. Now you can't make jokes like that in today's society after what happened, because those bring up an uncomfortable conversation. So it's just about making people feel uncomfortable, teaching, allowing people just to listen and understand our stories, how we live our life every day, and just understanding what we go through. And then one of the biggest things is acknowledging systematic racism, is acknowledging that we don't have, I know we're all put in the same situations, but you don't have the underlying difficulties that we go through as Black people to get to the level you do. Mm-hmm. Right? We don't have the handouts you do. We're not accepted in society as you are. In the corporate world, you don't see our people there. People working in the highest positions in the world, you don't see my color like that. So just acknowledging it and trying to understand what we go through every day, and just accepting us for who we are.
Absolutely. And it's cool for everyone you meet is just accepting them for who they are. And unfortunately, you know, our society, it's an entire class of people who are not being accepted for who they are based on the color of their skin in a lot of situations. And again, the first step of any problem is acknowledging it. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't know how it is in Canada, but unfortunately in America, there's a large population of people who can't even acknowledge that people are you know, people are underprivileged, less privileged. And it's funny, is they'll call inner city kids underprivileged, but they won't call themselves privileged, right? And it just doesn't make much sense. It's like, it almost feels like the second you turn it back on them, they feel like they're being attacked, but it's not an attack at all. You know, there are plenty of poor white people and who aren't privileged in that sense. I was certainly privileged because of not only the family I grew up in, but my skin color. And there's different levels of privileges. And there's plenty of everyone has problems, and everyone's story matters. Everyone's problems matter. But it's just acknowledging that this entire class of people start off on a lower level. It's more difficult for them to rise up through the ranks. And they're people who look like them aren't in positions of power to make changes that need to happen.
Like I said, I would always, not always, but there was times where I would say to a white, someone that was white, I'd say, you're privileged. And they would automatically see it as an attack.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an attack at all. It's the truth. It's the reality of life. White people are more privileged than we are. Like you said, we grew up in inner city communities. It's the same thing here in Toronto, like in Canada. There's racism here. I just don't believe it as in your face as is in the States. But we see it here every day, dealing with police, dealing with in the corporate world, dealing just in our everyday encounters. Just walking down the street, having someone cross the street just because it's the color of your skin. Walking past a car, having someone double, triple lock the doors. Not getting on the elevator with you. Clenching their purses when you walk by, going into a store, everyone's following you around. It's not as in your face as in the city, but it's definitely here for sure. Even like going to like these small towns, you just don't see people that look like me there. I remember one time we were in this small town, and it was a small store, and they had a tip jar, and all these white people were going through, everyone was there. And then me and my friends were in the back, so we stepped up, it was our turn. And as soon as we stepped up, the lady came and emptied out the tip jar, making sure we weren't taking anything. And it's just these little things that you catch on to, and it's like, but it's a society, right? It's what we live in every day, and you just have to accept it and move on. But it's just little things like that that you catch on to every day.
And I think on a lot of issues of life, again, you do have to accept it and move on. But I think that this is one that we can't accept. And because, again, that stuff, and when you're seeing that from when you're little, it's not like this just starts when you're 18 years old. This is happening from when you're 6 years old. And it makes no sense, because there's no difference between white and black people. It's difference between cultures, for sure. There's no difference between us besides the amount of melatonin in our skin. And to treat people differently, again, purely because of the color of their skin is something we can't accept. And that's why I'm glad, really glad that this stuff is happening in society now, especially when everyone has the time and to pay attention to it. And it's important that we keep it going and keep hearing stories just like that one. It's little from the outside looking in, but as you know, however old you were then, it wasn't little to you then. It probably hit you deep, and it just added on more evidence to the belief that you were disadvantaged because of the color of your skin, and you were, objectively, and then you also believe that, and like I said, the things we believe come true.
Yeah, it's something that you deal with every day, and just growing up, there's so many stories I have, just being in those uncomfortable places, uncomfortable encounters, and it just really makes you think, just because of the color of my skin is why I'm being treated that way. You see in everyday society, in social media, everyone loves the black culture. Love black culture, we love our music, our food, but you don't love us as people. And that, I think that's what hurts the most. Like, everyone wants to play our music, everything like that, but when it comes to helping out your black brother or your black sister and just being there for them, being accepted, it just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think one of the first times I really noticed, just being in the States, I never knew what a trust fund was. And just someone, having someone explain that to me and understand what it was, and having that privilege and being exposed to that opportunity, I don't even know what that is. I think a lot of black kids wouldn't even know what that is growing up or have that to deal with. So that's just another thing that we have to deal with as well.
Absolutely. It's entirely different. And we have to ask, like, why is it different? I was having this conversation with an adult, and it's their generation above one above us. It's difficult for them to understand because they've had these beliefs their whole lives. And they were saying, like, I don't judge people by the color of their skin. Like, I'm not racist. I'm not. And that person truly believed that. But when we got deeper into the conversation, she was like, well, I sometimes, you know, if I'm walking by a black person, I will clutch my purse or walk to the other side of the street, but it's not because they're black. It's because I'm in that neighborhood. I'm in that, you know, it's because they're poor, was more or less it. You know, I'm in a poor neighborhood and they're walking by and they're dressed, you know, they got the saggy pants or whatever. And I said, well, first of all, that's their culture. That's how they like dressing. It's no different than you like dressing like this. It's just how they like dressing. And second of all, have you ever asked yourself why that entire class of people is poor? And they're living in those, you know, living in that situation. And she was like, no, I've never thought about that. And it's just asking questions like that. Like, clearly, if there's no difference in our DNA besides melatonin, but an entire class of people is clearly, everyone will agree that black people are less privileged in the sense that there's a lot more poor black people than white people. Why? Like, why is that happening?
Yeah, so going back to 400 plus years of racism, right? Once we started off and slavery was abolished, white people are already ahead of us, right? They own everything. So how are we supposed to get on level grounds then if we're not accepted? If we're not accepted, we'll never be on level grounds. So white people always have the advantage. They control everything. They take care of their own people before they take care of ours. So we're always up against it as black people. And then we're forced to live in these communities, right? Low income, not having full family, stuff like that, access to jobs the way white people do, and just being segregated that way and put down. And then you have, on top of that, you have the criminal justice system putting us down as well. So we're always up against it.
And the criminal justice one is a huge one, and why there's such a big distrust between the black community and police. Something that a lot of, again, the older generation or white people don't understand. It's like, why was he resisting arrest? It's like, because he grew up in a situation where his friends and himself were constantly, their lives were ruined by one or two mistakes that we all made. Like, what, drinking in high school, smoking some weed in high school, using counterfeit bills should not be a death sentence. And on we can go with these little infractions. And white people, I hope people can just admit it, so much more frequently. Sure, there are white people who get in trouble and do get the same, but such better odds of getting off with a slap on the wrist, with community service and off your record. And even if it does go on your record, employers still, you know, giving someone with a white person with a job, a white person with a record, a job, as opposed to a black person immediately, once that's on your record, black people know that that's like it, you know, that their life is now, they're going to be seen as a criminal. They're a black person with a record. And that's just, again, a belief they have about themselves that will come true, because it's come true for their parents, their aunts and uncles, their cousins, their friends. And that's systematic racism. And we just have to accept it, acknowledge it, and figure out a solution.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be like that at all, because the police are there to protect you in every way they can. But when we go up against police and when we encounter police, it's the scariest thing you could ever go through. Like, having a traffic stop, your heart's pumping out of your chest, but you don't know what's going to happen. Just because you've seen it so many times, people your race are getting dealt with different just because of the color of their skin. And you see it in the news, you see like mass murders being put into handcuffs, even wadded. And a guy on a simple traffic stop is running away from the police unarmed, is getting shot in the back. And it's like, you see so many times, you see cops coming up into your place of residence, like holding you up, just as a kid too. As a kid, they're coming up to us and saying, what are you guys doing? When we're clearly doing nothing unarmed. And it's just like, from a kid, you experience the same thing growing up, and now growing up, it's even worse now.
Yeah, I would urge anyone out there who hasn't read the Breonna Taylor story to read it and pretend that's your daughter, your sister, your friend, and ask yourself how pissed off you'd be. And then ask yourself if you're still concerned about, you know, the riots and protests that were going on. Because the police are there to serve and protect us and not break down our doors and start shooting. And I think the way that police treat white people is the right way. And that's why white people don't understand. It's just that black people are not getting treated that way. And we want to, it's not, that's what I always say, there's no guilt or shame in admitting privilege. And it's not like we're going to take a step back. It's bringing everyone up to this level of privilege and building trust between that community and the police, where the police aren't harassing inner city kids, predominantly black kids, to build that distrust from a young age, and also teach these kids self-belief that they're a criminal and should be treated this way. But that mistakes that you make when you're a kid in high school shouldn't be detrimental to your chances of getting a job and having a happy life, and certainly shouldn't be a death sentence. I hope everyone can agree on that.
Yeah. Like, even seeing the, in the criminal justice system, how black people are prosecuted so much different than white people.
Mm-hmm.
You might, especially, you see so many cases with rape, and a black guy is given, I say, 40 years, and a white guy is given 2-3 years probation, a slap on the wrist. Why is that? It's because of the color of their skin. You don't believe their story. You see them as criminals. You see them as predators, and it shouldn't be that way. And you see that in so many cases.
For sure. It's been happening for centuries, and these beliefs get passed down from generation to generation, and that's why we have to be the generation, and I think we're going to be the generation that stops, and especially on this issue, changes it in ourselves, which is hard to do. Changing human behavior is hard, but changes it in ourselves and then teaches our kids better, and that's something we should all strive for, and it's something we have to do because, again, these are our friends. You know, I urge people who don't have black friends to go and try and make black friends, because you'll care, you'll empathize a lot more with their struggle when you care about those people. And again, I've known Tristan for years, and if it wasn't a real problem, he wouldn't be talking about it. He wouldn't, you know, he's not the type of guy to look for pity or to do this or that. It's clearly a problem when people like Tristan and Tanner are coming on a podcast, on the internet, and sharing their stories with the public. Well, on that, if you want to touch on, I know the situation, I don't know much about the situation with your coach, but I know some of the players came out and decided to speak about something. If you want to go through that.
Yeah, so there was a game last year. We were playing a team from Calgary. There was a little scuffle after the game, and then they basically said that our coach used the N-word during this couple. So the coach came out and said, oh, our coach used this word. And they basically took them to court and basically ruled it and said it was true. But no, there was, in that entire scuffle, no one heard it. There's no witnesses that said they heard it. There was no reaction. And then all of a sudden now, he's suspended. And then he can basically lose his job now just because of one person saying that. And it was never heard from anyone. There's millions of cameras. There's so many cameras in the stadium. No one heard anything. Because we all know if that N-word is dropped by a white person, there's a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that. So it's just tough. And you understand the seriousness of the word and understand the seriousness of racism, especially what's going on today. And once you're labeled a racist, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? To put someone's livelihood at stake for something that's not true is one of the worst things you could do. And I really feel for him because we know it was not true. Their players know it's not true, but it's a coach using his platform, his stance to put someone else down, not knowing the implications that go along with it. And it's just really crazy that it's still going on and it's taking this process is taking so long. So we're really just standing up for him at this point and showing that, because we know him as a person, we know he's one of the greatest coaches, best person. If you see our team, 80% of us are black, and we know we would never stand for that. So it's just crazy to see what he's going through right now. We're just here for him, but you really understand the seriousness of racism and that word, and and really what's going on in the world right now. It's really just a bad time for all of it.
Absolutely, and it's a shame that someone, again, obviously, I was certainly not there, but a shame that it sounds like someone would use that as a weapon against someone else for whatever reasons they have for doing it. And I know you guys won the championship last year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if your coach was a racist, it would have been difficult for a team of 80% black people to come together and be successful. So I think it's important. I read the letter and didn't understand the backstory to it, which is why I was, you know, excited to talk to you and hear it. It's important in all situations to speak your mind and let people know what's going on, you know, when the time is right. And I'm, you know, proud of you guys for doing that, for standing up for him. It's difficult to put yourselves out there, and it sounds like you guys are doing what's right. And again, it's a real shame if someone's using that conversation to further a different agenda.
Yeah, it's one of the worst things you could do, man. I think being called a rapist and a racist is probably one of the worst things you could be called. But yeah, it's something we have to stand up for. I think this is the right time to stand up for racism. You see what's going on, people's minds aren't obligated with work, their daily lives, everyone's locked in, not having much to do. So this is a time for people to reflect, people to understand what's going on and really speak out. I'm not usually someone that speaks out on much. I'm usually someone that stays to myself, but I feel like it's my obligation as a black person, as a black man, to share my stories and really allow people to understand what we go through every day. I think this probably wouldn't be something I would do if this wasn't going on, but I understand the importance of this. I know that I have a voice, that we all have a voice, and it's just about sharing our stories and allowing people to understand and see what's going on with our lives every day.
Absolutely. It takes a lot of courage to do it too in any situation, whether we're talking about mental health or this topic. And I'm really proud of all of you guys for speaking. I think that now it really is, you know, in past incidents, you know, it was like a conversation for like a week and then it would stop. And I think this time it's different. It's people are really keeping the momentum going and speaking. And I think as a white person, I think it's up to us to listen first and foremost. Listen, have the empathy to put yourselves in someone else's shoes. Even if you can't understand the exact experiences, you can understand the feelings of feeling left out or feeling attacked or this or that, and just understand that it's even magnified, again, because this is something they can't control and don't want to control, something they're proud of, and unfortunately society tries to make them feel ashamed of it, whether on purpose or an accident, doesn't matter. And it's really important for first white people to listen. Secondly, to acknowledge that it's a problem and acknowledge that we're privileged purely because of the skin color of our skin. Not that we don't have problems, not that life isn't hard for us too, but that it starts off easier just because of the color of our skin. It's important to acknowledge. And then third is taking action, whether that's in yourself. If you're someone who's doesn't think you're a racist, but you've certainly, like, you know, you joke around and that's your way of connecting with people and you've made those stereotype jokes, to stop doing that. It takes some effort to change your behavior, but put the effort in to make that change in yourself. I'm personally gonna, I'll take the opportunity to apologize for any jokes I made. I think, you know, it was always out of love, but for sure, I've made them, and I do apologize for that. And then lastly is reaching out to other people and if it's the older generation where you know that, again, they might not think that they're racist, but they have these beliefs that, don't coincide with our current society. It's helping them kind of see these experiences, whether it's share the podcast with them or there's a million other outlets out there where black people are starting to share their experiences and their feelings. And it's just starting to reach out to people and find common ground with everyone and just cementing the understanding in that all lives cannot matter until black lives matter. And just cementing that understanding in for everyone, and everyone making an effort to make that come true, for black lives to matter just as much as every other life matters.
No, so I really appreciate like what you're doing here, the stance that you're taking. Just being around, I know the type of person you are, and I never felt any ways about it. I always knew you were a real friend and everything like that. And I think this is a different time to see what's going on. You wouldn't really see someone our age or just a regular white person understanding what's going on. Like, listen to everything you just said. You could tell that there's a difference and you understand what's going on, that there's a serious problem and that you're there for change. Until black people have white people like you on our side, we'll never be able to be on the same level. So, like I said, I really appreciate what you're doing and the way you're allowing for us to speak on it and tell our own stories. And that's really important, that people just understand and listen, try and relate to us. I know you'll never understand what we go through every day, but as long as you acknowledge it, like you said, have empathy towards it, and that's really what we need for white people just to be on our side. And we can't do it by ourselves, right? So I appreciate that.
Absolutely, man. And seems like a simple thing, being on our friend's side. If you don't have black friends, again, it's being on just human being side, being in it together. Again, life is hard for everyone. Empathize with that an entire group of people is shouting out that they have this problem after centuries of having it. And just be on their team, be on their side, and do whatever we can, most importantly, to help the problem and make life a little bit better for everyone. There's so much human potential in the black community that is wasted because of these societal problems, whether they be like institutional racism or just that these beliefs that we as a society hammer into them when they're young, and they tell themselves, they tell other people, and then they come true. And so much talent wasted, mentally, what a shortage in life we have of doctors, of lawyers, of talented people, and entire communities being set back to the point where their lives are being wasted, whether by death or by drugs or by imprisonment. And we need to do something. So I think the first step is talking about it. And that's what this platform is for. So it takes courage to do it always and anything in life. So I really appreciate you having the courage to come on here, share your story, share your feelings towards it. Really appreciate you as a friend. And hope really does come from hearing other people's experiences. So if you ever have anyone else who wants to come on and share, or if you ever want to come back and then talk about anything else, always open invite.
No, always, man. I appreciate you. And I always come back and talk. Like I said, I appreciate you giving me the platform to share my experiences and how we live. But I really appreciate it. Like I said, it's going to take people like you for us to make a difference, for society to make a difference, and allow black people to be included the way we should. So I really appreciate you, man.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. It's my pleasure. What's the deal with, are you guys playing this season, or are they...
They're trying to get us to play a tournament style. It started usually August or September at a neutral site. One of the provinces that has probably the lowest rate or no cases of corona. So that's what they're looking at. But we're in phase one right now. We started training six at a time, three different groups, and the budget's social distancing, but it's a start. So hopefully we'll get to play some sort of games this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hope you guys do. I'll keep my eyes open for it. If you're in the Canada area and you know someone who can help out Forge FC with their legal situation with their coach, it sounds like, he sounds like a good guy who needs some help. And wish you guys all the best in that situation. And if you guys, I'm hoping you guys get to play, and all the best if you do.
I appreciate you. Good luck with what you got going on here, man. It's huge. And we appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man. Really, really do. And I'll talk to you soon, bro.
All right, later.
Later, bro.